Yo, bro, that's deep, bro. High five. High five on that. Oh, yeah. Bro, if you don't get that, that's because it's deep. And it's science, so don't question that. All right?
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode 101. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm a bit tired. I was up late last night.
Oh, yeah? Little New Year special, New Year celebration still? Come on, it's like the first week of January. Hopefully you've gotten it out of your blood.
No, I got my copy of the vSAN deep dive update, and I wanted to see what had changed.
Nice. I'm glad you did your homework, because today we're talking about the new book that just came out, the vSAN 6.7 Update 1 Deep Dive. And we've got the authors of the book on the call with us today. So we've got Cormac Hogan and Duncan Epping. I'm sure you know these guys. They're authoritative sources in the storage and availability world at VMware. They've co-authored several books, vSAN Essentials, the vSphere Clustering Technical Deep Dive, you name it. They're prolific bloggers, and they can be found on pretty much the biggest rooms at any industry event, VMworld, vMugs, you name it. Great guys from the office of the CTO. Duncan, Cormac, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Pete. Thanks, John.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, man. Always happy to have you guys on. So for those of you wondering why I just played Metallica's Turn the Page, the reason for that is I just read the book's dedication. And in the dedication, you guys quote some lyrics to that song, Turn the Page. And then you dedicate the book to the whole vSAN Road Warriors, which I thought was pretty cool. I also like the fact that you said it was by Metallica. and then said, oh, and also written by Bob Seger.
I prefer the Seeger version myself, but I'm old.
Yeah,
really old.
I like how there's actually in the dedication, there's specifically a Spotify link so you can go listen to it. So.
Yeah, that song got me all hyped for the episode. I played it. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot how good the Metallica version of this song is. But then you said you dedicate the book to all vSAN road warriors traveling day in and day out to spread the vSAN story. So I thought that was pretty appropriate.
Yeah, there's a good reason we did that. Cormac and I, you know, same. Go for you guys, probably spend a lot of time on the road talking about vSAN. And I don't think everyone realizes how many people do that day in, day out, just visiting customers. So, you know, it was time to shine a spotlight on those guys as well. So that's why we wrote that.
I like it. I like it. So the way this episode's going to go, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about being an author in general. What made you, you know, write this book specifically? And then maybe we can transition onto some of the vSAN specific topics that you guys touched on in U1 and get your take on some of those. Make sense?
Sure.
Awesome. Let's do it. All right, cool. So let's start with the forward. I noticed right away you guys got Yanbing Li, our big boss, the senior VP and GM at the Storage and Availability Business Unit of VMware, to do the forward. Nice, man. How'd you pull that one off?
Begged.
Did you have to pay? No, just kidding.
Not at all. She's very gracious. We just reached out and said, would she do that forward for us? And just kind of give us, I suppose, a business perspective rather than just the techie perspective that we always give out. So, yeah. She turned that out for us. I think it's pretty good forward.
Yeah, she's got a great business mind. I like that about her. She's definitely, and I like the forward. You know, she was definitely complimentary of you guys. And I agree with that. You guys, you know, I think she said something to the effect that you guys have an expert level understanding of architecture and technology. And you're able to articulate that to customers and field. And I agree with that. So kudos to you guys for doing all the hard work and evangelizing vSAN.
Gee, thanks, Pete. Means so much coming from you.
Yeah. It's, come on, you know I'm sincere. Come on.
All right,
just kidding. Anyway, so you guys have been writing books for a while. And, you know, my question is, how long does it take you to write a book? I mean, it seems because they're so big, they're filled with content. Like, how long does it take you start to finish when you say, all right, we're gonna do a book, and then to the time that it's actually done? How long does that take?
Kind of depends, I guess. I mean, we've done a bunch of books now, and we've done updates of multiple books, both the Clustering Deep Dive and the vSAN book. And the updates you know, for both Cormac and myself are pretty straightforward, I would say. Writing it from scratch, that typically takes, you know, a significant amount of time. I think the first book probably took, you know, close to 6 months, 5 to 6 months.
Yeah, there was. We spent a lot of time in the initial one, for sure. Even just to try and get the structure and the layout and the format right, that took an awful long time.
And it's especially the structure of the book is challenging, because when you start writing, you have an idea about, you know, what should be in which chapter, and then as you go through the different chapters, you start figuring out that different bits and pieces were missing in the original table of contents. So you start adding stuff, then you figure, well, you know, I'm now talking about topic X, but I haven't discussed Y yet. So,
oh yeah,
or Z. So people don't understand what it's about. So now we need to start introducing those concepts as well. But they were originally planned for a different chapter. So just go. You keep on going back and forth and endlessly. Actually, with this book, with the last book that we did, the VSAN Deep Dive, which is an update from or a rewrite of the Essentials book, the VSAN Essentials book, we completely overhauled the book, even from a flow perspective. So we figured that, you know, a lot of the information that was spread out through different chapters probably belonged to a single chapter. So we had to rewrite a lot of it. And we ended up deduplicating a lot of the content as a result, but still ended up with more pages than we originally had. So it was a bizarre experience.
Yeah, I think the policies in particular, we seem to have stuff about policies and in a lot of cases, repetitive stuff around policies dotted around the book. So we made a concerted effort to try and bring all that into one area. That was one of the big things we changed.
Yeah, that has to be a big challenge when you're co-authoring a book and you both have, you know, a lot of knowledge about the subject, but there's going to be some overlap. That must be painful if you're not because if you're writing the book by yourself, then you can space it out and say, well, I'll cover this here, I'll cover that there. But I guess I'm sure there's a challenge, right? You know, co-authoring with someone and making sure that you're not doing too much overlap and that you're speaking the same language. Has that been a challenge for you guys, co-authoring versus maybe writing a book by yourself?
I was just going to say, I've only ever co-authored, so I've only written the VSAN book with Duncan. So, in the beginning, there was a lot of that to-ing and fro-ing, and I'd have a bunch of information squirreled away somewhere, and Duncan would have information squirreled away, and I was trying to bring all of that together and trying to, you know, divvy it up into chapters or what have you. But from the initial one, which was the hardest, the updates were pretty straightforward because we just picked chapters and we worked on individual chapters and just reviewed each other's work and added insight and inputs where necessary. So it gets easier as you're doing the updates, but nothing compared to the initial challenge of creating the book from scratch.
I guess what also helps is knowing your co-author well. I think the biggest mistake a lot of people make is they tend to look for the most knowledgeable person in an organization or in the community, whatever, to write a book with. But that's not always the best person to write a book with, because you need to understand more or less what the other person is going to write about, you know, what his style is. The styles more or less need to match. You need to be able to communicate.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, you know, for us, that has always been easy. I knew from day one, even with the initial book, that writing a book with Cormac was going to be easy, simply because, you know, he's an easy guy to talk with, but also he cranks out material in an extremely fast way, very similar to the way I do it. So I knew, you know, if I was done with chapter 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, whatever it is, that he would have the same number of chapters done. And that makes your life a lot easier and a lot less stressful.
Oh, yeah, please. Every time I Google anything about whether it's VVols or VSAN, I immediately land either on, you know, Yellow Bricks or CormacHogan.com for sure. Those are usually in my top 5 of my Google searches. So you guys are definitely pounding out the material. So I guess that probably helps make, you know, writing a book easier than never writing anything and then trying to take on a monumental task of writing an entire deep dive.
Yeah, for sure. The blogging helps. Yeah. Getting into that frame of mind of, you know, churning out content. Yep.
And this time you guys chose to do self-publishing. And what made you go that route?
Oh, I can answer that one. That was pretty straightforward. The original books were published on VMware Press. Back then, VMware Press was a collaboration between VMware and Pearson.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what happened over the last year, but we spoke with Pearson a couple of times, or VMware Press, actually, not with Pearson. And they weren't sure what was going to happen to that project or that collaboration, and we wanted to do a next version of the book, so we asked them if it was okay for us to do a self-publishing version, and they said, you know, go ahead, we're not sure what's going to happen next, there may or may not be a VMware Press next year, or who knows what's going to happen. So, you know, you guys can go ahead and produce the book by yourself. And I'd already done it before. And I don't think self-publishing is easy. It's far from easy. It's a lot more complex than using a publisher, because you're responsible for every single thing, from formatting to, you know, doing a cover of the book or, you know, the editing, tech editing, you name it. But, you know, the good thing is as well is that you have everything in your own control. So when you feel you're done, you can actually publish it. Well, with a book publisher, when you are done, they still need to spend another 3 months, you know, getting everything worked out and getting the print files and you name it. In our case, when we were done, we created the PDF and it was up on Amazon within a day. And two days later, the book was available. So you can ship it, which is nice. Plus, the other added benefit, I would say, is that you can control the price point of the book. And we did that with the deep dive, with the clustering deep dive. And we made sure that the ebook was a lot cheaper than the paper version. That is something that most publishers won't do. So they sell a book for $50 and then they will sell the ebook for $40.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
If you compare it to our book, the book is $40, but the ebook is $9.99. So less than $10.
Yeah, $10 for an entire vSAN deep dive book. That's almost free. That's ridiculous. I need to talk to you guys. We need to. Next version needs to be a little bit more expensive, and I want to get it cut.
Yeah, sure. We can discuss.
Pete sounds like a publisher here.
If you can do all of the editing and the publishing work, then sure, we can discuss your 2 or 3%. That's fine. But yeah, the thing is as well, what a lot of people don't understand about self-publishing, and I don't want to go into royalties and stuff like that too deep, but if you look at the model that Amazon has, the way they work is that if you sell an ebook for less than $10, you get more royalties than when you sell it for anything above $10. So for a publisher to get, or for an author like us, when it comes to royalties, to get anything similar to what you would get slightly below $10, it means you need to jack up the price to $16 or $17 or $18, whatever it is. Then it starts being more or less the same. You know, we felt that it didn't make sense to have a ebook similar price as the paper copy. So as soon as you make that decision, the only, you know, real decision you have to make is whether it's going to be $20 or $9.99. And I think $9.99 is a fair price for everyone worldwide, because that is one of the most common complaints I've been getting. You know, most people in the US can buy a book for $20 or $30 or $40. Oh, yeah. Right? But in South Africa or India or wherever it is, not everyone can spend $40 on a book. So that's why we decided to price low as well, that more or less, I'm not going to say everyone, because there's still going to be people who can't afford it, but most people should be able to afford it, you know, a $10 book.
Yeah, I noticed on your blog post about the book that you basically were recommending people to get the ebook, you know, even though it was cheaper, you know, just to save the printing cost and trees and all that stuff and to be green. But I have to say, not to disagree with you, but I personally, I hope some people do that for sure. But I personally like the paper books. I like to touch a book. I like to smell a book. I like to feel it in my hands when I'm actually, I like to travel with it. And so I'm not a, ebooks are good, but I don't know. There's something about a tangible item that I can actually touch and read.
I'm with you though. I think, I don't know what it is for me. Maybe it's just the way that we grew up with, you know, books and learning and college. You're always reading something that's in your hand and, you know, paper, whatever. So I'm kind of similar to that approach as well.
I mean, I get it. It's just that I wanted to make sure that people understood as well the difference between an ebook from an environmental perspective. When I looked up those numbers, it is actually quite ridiculous, to be honest. And, you know, a lot of the tech people either own a Kindle or some other e-readers. So the ebook is probably, you know, the easiest choice for most people. I just wanted to get that out there. And, you know, to us, if you buy the paper version or the ebook version, it's fine with me. And then I don't care, whatever makes you happy.
Nice, nice. So I noticed this one has got a slightly different color scheme. It has that same theme, which I think is really appealing, the overlapping shapes and stuff like that. But this one you guys went with orange. What was the change in color? Is there anything behind that?
Yeah, so I think, well, Duncan being Dutch from the Netherlands, which orange is the predominant color there, and me being Irish from Ireland and green being the predominant color here, I think that's kind of how we came up with the color scheme. Now, the Irish flag is green, white, and orange, or green, white, and gold. So it's quite a nice color scheme for me.
I like it. That didn't even register to me that this would be a country color. I thought you guys were just going for more of a psychological. I've always heard that orange is like a color that brings happiness to people. But no, we're talking about patriotism here. I like it.
You know how happy the Dutch people are. So that is understandable.
Oh, yeah. You epitomize that, buddy.
Well, one more question before we transition onto the VSAN stuff. Do you guys do any, the answer may be no, but I'm curious. Do you guys ever hide any secrets in your books or have any little like Easter eggs or golden nuggets for people to find? Is that something that you guys ever do?
Yeah, the deliberate mistakes that we put in the book are Easter eggs. So if you find any, let us know. You get a prize.
You heard it here, folks. Just go ahead and go and just search the entire book for any mistakes and send them to CormacHogan.com.
And reach out to Pete and the podcast team, and they'll give you the prize.
Yeah, and we'll give you a free copy of the updated ebook. Awesome. So the name of this book is the VSAN 6.7 U1 Deep Dive. Why did you choose 6.7 U1 as opposed to just doing another Essentials book?
I think for us it was... So the last Essentials book was 6.2, and you know, just trying to find the time to do an update, and you know, it wasn't for want of the fact of people prompting us to provide an update. I think almost monthly we were getting pinged from somebody that said, "Is there a new version of the book coming? Is there a new version of the book coming?"
Yeah,
and I think it's just that we finally had some cycles. You know, I had a busy couple of years. I finally had a bit of time that I could do some work on the side on this. I think probably the same for Duncan because he was tied up doing the cluster deep dive and so on. And so it's just, I suppose the timing and the fact that the update one was coming out at the time that we were planning to do the book update. So we just incorporated those new features that were in U1 as well.
Yeah, and the other thing is we had been discussing it a couple of times, but the challenge that we had was the pace of the VSAN releases, to be honest. I mean, a new release every 6 months just makes it very difficult to keep the book up to date. So what we did after 6.2, we figured we would wait a couple of releases just to make sure that there would be, you know, a significant number of changes that we could add into the book. You know, things like, you know, local protection for stretch clusters, you know, unmapped that is part of 6.7, and you name it. We just wanted to make sure that we could get enough changes into the book, because if only, you know, 3% or 4% of the book has changed, it doesn't really warrant a new version of the book. And, you know, having people buying a full new copy for a minor change doesn't make sense.
Sure. Yeah, that was my question, because I was like, wow, this is a book on update one, which I'm sure it's obviously going to cover the entire of VSAN. But, you know, it's not like there's going to be a book on VSAN 6.7 update, whatever the next version is. You know, like, how often do you think, you know, moving forward when you do, because these books are valuable and people use these. And so I know you're going to do another one in the future, but like, how often what do you think is a good time? And then how do you do the naming on that? You know, like, if someone looks at this and says, oh, this is 6.7 update one, but now we're on some other update, is this dated information? Like, how do you manage to have some sort of valid currency to the book?
I think, you know, I think that's the problem with tech books in general. We have the same problem with the clustering deep dive book, but yet we still have people buying, you know, the clustering deep dive 5.0 book. Even recently, I saw a person picked up the 4.x version of the clustering deep dive.
Wow!
You know, people are still running older versions of the of technology. People are moving from vSphere 5.x over to 6.x right now. So, you know, people will still end up buying it. But realistically speaking, you know, books like these probably have a shelf life of 9 months, roughly, maybe 12 months. And that's when, you know, the numbers of books you end up selling starts declining fast. And it is what it is. And, you know, will there be a 6.7 update to, or, you know, whatever the next version is going to be, maybe 7.0? I don't know. It also depends on, you know, for us, what we are doing at that point in time from a career standpoint. The reason we're capable of writing this book is because Cormac and I both, on a day-to-day basis, work on VSAN specifically.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, if I wasn't working on VSAN specifically, it would become a lot more challenging to write a book like this. So it's difficult to say, you know, if I would write another update 2 years from now, whatever it is, we'll see what's going to happen.
So are you announcing a move right here on the podcast? Duncan, do you want to share with us? What is this?
Sure.
Yeah, I thought you were retiring off all the royalties you're going to make.
Yes.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, I may consider that when the first $26 check from Amazon comes in.
Party at Dunkin's. Yeah, we've touched about that before in the past. I mean, this is not a get rich scheme, is it? Authoring.
The thing is, as well, because I was talking to someone about that recently, and I had the discussion with Cormac about that as well. Especially with the vSAN deep dive, we have 17,000 customers worldwide. So realistically, you're not going to sell 50,000 copies of the book. It's not going to happen because you don't have that many customers using it. So that's that. And the same applies to the clustering deep dive. We've sold literally thousands of copies. Probably at this point of the various versions, probably close to 100,000 copies. But if there are two or three authors and you look at the royalty scheme for these types of books, getting rich anytime soon is not going to happen. It's simply not there.
Maybe if you change the title, maybe it'd be like 50 Shades of VSAN or something. Maybe you can get a wider audience.
Sure. Can we get you on the book cover as well?
Oh, geez.
I want to read Pete's version of the host rules chapter after he redoes that. So
thanks for that visual.
Well, I was going to say, having read through the book last night, or at least decent bits and pieces of it, I did like the layout in terms of how you started with kind of the pre-requirements.
Yeah.
You moved forward to, the individual design decisions. Then you got into operational. And then at the end, you've got some troubleshooting and CLI kind of information. It really does feel like, this is the book, if I'm going to even start as well as continue and finish, so to speak, to grab. And I like that there also was some details on some things like VASA providers and things like that. Kind of some of the RDT being explained a little bit, some of the under the hood bits.
Yeah, you talk about the book being for just a smaller audience. I like the fact that this book really does touch anybody that's touching the data center, regardless if you're at a higher level or if you're at a very deep level. So it does, you've got the introduction for what is vSAN, what is hyperconverged, and then you go through what it takes, what are the prerequisites, what does it take to actually do this, and then you move on to some of the more of the operational stuff. So I think there's something for everybody in this book. It's definitely all encompassing. I mean, it's a pretty impressive table of contents for sure.
That has always been our aim when we were discussing writing the book. We just wanted to make sure that it was suitable for most people that do anything in a data center to read. I think a lot of people, when writing a book, make the same mistake. There's not enough detail in there for the more experienced administrators. So we wanted to make sure that there is enough detail for those in there. But at the same time, the less experienced administrators also should be able to read it. So we need to make sure that it makes sense to everyone. That's why we had a bunch of guys reviewing the material, not just from a technical content perspective, but also, style-wise, and if it's just the readability aspect of things. I think that's very important.
Yep. I think you had Pete Keeler, who's on our team, as one of the reviewers. By the way, Pete Keeler, also, we did a vSAN 67U1 deep dive in episode 90. So if you want to get a full understanding of what came out in U1, you can listen back to episode 90. But then you also had Frank Dennerman, which I think would be a great resource for reviewing a book, because not only has he written a million books himself, but he really has a deep understanding and has a lot of experience writing this type of material. So yeah, good choice on that.
Yeah, those guys were excellent, especially the turnaround time on stuff. The fact that they could review things so quickly and get back to us so quickly, it was real help.
And it's funny because, it's a rewrite of an existing book. So this is the third version. We probably read the material ourselves, over a dozen times. And if you look at the amount of things that Pete and Frank both managed to find in the book that we ended up rewriting or changing, it's insane. They were very thorough. So that was very, very helpful.
I was going to say, I was a technical editor on, I think it was the second version. And yeah, it makes sense to have different eyes on it, every round, because you're going to have different, viewpoints or different kind of gotchas or quirks come out.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And so let's talk about 67U1, guys. I know you chose that as the title of the book, and you basically thought this was an important enough version to start writing the book. Is there anything about 67U1 that you think is, makes this version special?
I think for me, it was the operational stuff that we've started to put in place. A lot of the day two operations, things around preventing people from shooting themselves in the foot, sort of thing. So we did a lot of stuff around maintenance mode enhancements and, double checking and treble checking to make sure that if I take a vSAN node and I want to put it to maintenance mode, they're not going to impact something else that's going on. Oh, or yeah. There's checks checking to see whether there's stuff going on in the cluster before I do this operation. That's the kind of stuff that stood out for me in U1.
Yeah, we had a good conversation with Pauti Oriden about that. He works in Octo as well, and that was something that he had a lot of, you know, a lot of input on, the way maintenance mode really double checks and lets you know if anything else is in maintenance mode. It'll not let you shoot yourself in the foot. So and he had a lot of input into that. So I think it's a cool program. I was telling him this. I think it's a pretty great opportunity to have a job where you can test something and say, I really would like this to happen, and then actually have it implemented. That seems to be like a pretty rewarding job, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, for me, I wouldn't say that vSAN is, it's not, it's almost getting to the point where it's feature complete. If you look at all the data services that we now have, and I think now is the point where we have the cyclists to go back and just put these controls in place to prevent these kind of things from, you know, causing a cluster outage or a host outage and so on.
You see, Cormac, I really thought your answer was going to be, being a core storage guy that you are, I really thought you were going to say Unmat was going to be your favorite feature of U1.
Well, then John would start talking and we wouldn't get a word in for the rest of the session, right?
If I had been an author on this book, it would have been half Unmat probably. But, you know, I'm like the lone, you know, crazy guy in the wilderness eating locusts and yelling about the, you know, why everyone should Unmat all the things. So
So one half would be Unmat and the other half would be Untrimmed.
As it should be. Well, actually, it's a third, because you've also got, what is it, Deallocate, the NVMe version. So.
Oh, why did I open my mouth?
I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to let that one go.
And we're back. Okay.
What about you, Duncan?
I think for me, it was mainly a lot of the UI changes. I mean, since the last book, since the 6.2 book, we introduced the HTML5 client. And a lot of the work from a UI perspective also made, you know, us needing to update the all of the screenshots, basically, clustering, the cluster creation wizard completely changed. I think that one is pretty cool. But it also meant that we need to change the flow of the book in various sections and change all the screenshots and change some of the diagrams. So I mean, for me, that was one of the main reasons I thought we should start rewriting it. Because with the previous book, you could still use it. But if people were using it, you know, to configure something literally step by step, then it didn't work anymore because the UI changed completely. And there were so many different things added, like, you know, Cormac said, the stuff around maintenance mode, you know, some of the things around update manager, the support for updating firmware, for instance. I think that one was pretty big.
Yeah.
But specifically for me, I think the HTML5 introduction was huge.
Yeah, I like the fact that the Vim integration that came back, Vim integration for vSAN came like a version prior, but it really became usable, if you will, in 6.7 U1.
Exactly.
What about you, Juan? I can call you Juan on this episode because we don't have another Juan on the call like last episode. So go ahead, Juan. What about you? I was going to ask you what your favorite feature is on 6.7 U1, but we all know it's Unmap, so we can probably just move on.
Yeah. No, I was going to pretend. I was like, I don't know. But behind Unmap, I will say all the new quick start wizards, just in terms of making sure you've got that cluster set up right from the beginning, that automation, having, you know, in a previous life, I deployed clusters for customers and did a lot of PSO type work. And you do not realize how many repetitive clicks there are in the setup process of VM kernel ports and everything else and setting up NTP and just having that all streamlined within the UI. Like, yes, you could automate this stuff by CLI, but not everyone would want to, or there might be other things that were, you know, missing. And just having that whole process streamlined so that someone who, you know, can do really great automation and consistency from day one, that's a big deal.
Yep, the quick start is clean. A lot of the operation, I think Cormac, you said it best. You know, there was so many operational enhancements in update one that just made this definitely the best version out there. So let's wrap this up. I know if you're listening to this and you're interested in the book, obviously just Google, you'll find it. But you can find it on Cormac Hogan's website, CormacHogan.com. You can go to Yellow Bricks. But you guys are mainly, your distributor is Amazon, right? That's where you're selling it.
Yep, should be available in most Amazon stores worldwide now. I think it took a couple of days before it was available throughout the different regions, but as far as I've seen, it's available in almost all locations.
Yeah, and we were talking before the call, and Cormac, you gave me a great idea. We're gonna get a couple of these books and give them for giveaways for the podcast, and so more to come on that. But Duncan, there's also, there's like a package, right? Because I know there's the e-copy and then there's also the hardcover. Isn't there, I think I saw something, some conversation around the fact that you can actually save some money if you got the, you got both of them. Is that, is that true?
Yeah, if you want to buy both, but I think this is only available for the US market. I'm not 100% sure because when it comes to self-publishing, that's one of the challenging things with Amazon. The amount of information out there is limited in terms of what specific offers mean to the international market. But for the US market, definitely. If you buy the paper copy, then you can get a discounted version of the ebook. So the ebook then drops down to $2.99, so $3. So, you know, for $43 in total, you have both the ebook and the paper version.
Yeah, that's smart. I like it. John, I see you already got your book.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get the ebook as well, or you just have the...
Yeah, I got the ebook, of course. That goes back to when it was an option. We would actually leave like a Kindle with a bunch of different reference guides and ebooks and manuals in the rack. So that way, if you were, you know, stuck trying to troubleshoot something at the data center at 3 a.m., you had everything handy.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, gentlemen, we're coming up on the hour. I don't want to take too much of your time. I appreciate you sharing your insights on the authoring process, but also vSAN 6721. And so what's coming up next for you guys? You have any events coming up? Is there anywhere people can side finding you on the Twitters, which everybody probably already does? Is there any events you guys got coming up?
So we do have a vSAN chat Twitter event tomorrow. That's Wednesday, the 9th of January. I'm not sure whether the podcast will be out.
Nope, that will have already happened because this comes, we try to put them out on Fridays. And so,
there we go. Yeah, so we've done a few things like that recently. I think Duncan has something in EMEA the following week, right, Duncan?
Yeah, I'm doing a webinar next week. I think it's on Tuesday from the top of my head. It's during EMEA times, but we're talking about things like the upcoming vSAN file services and vSAN data protection.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep. And on top of that, I'm also doing the Newcastle vMUG, and I'm also doing the keynote in Poland for the vMUG. So that's also something that's coming out that will be soon.
Very nice. Give me a quick pitch. What do you think about the new file services? I've been working with the beta myself, but pretty cool, right? Like it's something that I think vSAN should have had file services much earlier, but I think it's pretty interesting that they have it now. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's, you know, I said this to the engineering team as well. Whenever I talk to a customer, at the end of the conversation, they have two questions. So when do I get a native data protection solution? And when do we have native file services? Because in the end, a lot of our customers are replacing traditional arrays. And a lot of those traditional arrays, you know, are the NetApps of the world or the older EMC solutions where you have both file and block. And they can't keep those around just for file services. So they need to have a solution to replace that with. And having a scale-out file solution is, you know, file services solution is just amazing. And I know a lot of people have been saying, you know, we needed this from day one. We needed this 2 or 3 years ago. But the reality is that creating a distributed file service is not easy. And that's why it's been taking this long. It's just going to take some time to release. We want to make sure that we release something that is rock solid. So it's going to take time.
I agree. Well said. All right. Yeah. Let's close it on that note. John, before we take off, any more questions for these gentlemen?
Long live 6.7.
You want. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Cormac, Duncan, thank you so much for joining us this week. And we look forward to seeing you in a future episode. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Corman and Duncan for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now. There it is. Duncan doing the dance moves. I wish this was on video. You got skills there.
You didn't do a screenshot of that?
I should have. I was too slow to the punch. Duncan, do it again.
Thanks.
Got him. Nailed it.
There we go.
All right, gents. That was fun.
Enough of this jibber jabber.